This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Coming up in September and for the whole month, spilling a little into October, is the Diversity KL International Arts Festival 2017. There are a slew of performances, talks, exhibitions. The very first performance starts on Friday, September 1st, and the very last one, October 1st. The festival, unlike others, offers children-friendly or family-friendly shows. Today with me are Johnny Gillett, the journeyman, a theatre practitioner who was first here at BFM in March talking about storytelling for the business world. And he's here with Lim Ken Lee of KL Shakespeare Players, a theatre company to which I belong also. So this is my disclaimer before jumping to asking these folks any questions. Okay, Johnny.
Hi,
you are the storyteller. What's your role in this production?
I think I've been brought in as consultant. And I'm bringing sort of from my experience and knowledge ideas and some pointers in how this production can use storytelling in its current way of retelling the story of Macbeth.
This is a theatre company that you're consulting with, and a theatre company that has been doing productions. So,
yeah, there's a number of areas, I suppose, that a storyteller perhaps can come in on. One of them might be the idea of the themes and how the story's being retold, what to bring forward in that telling for kids, but also the nature of storytelling in itself, how the actors can be more storytellers rather than playing characters.
Do you have a specific definition for storytelling that we need to get our head around first before we can even proceed with this discussion?
Quite possibly, yeah, because, I mean, for a lot of people, storytelling is just the sharing of a narrative, perhaps, and that could be in many forms, from being a journalist to somebody that's written a piece of theatre or a novelist. But I'm a storyteller more in what I call the traditional sense. So we're talking about oral storytelling, talking about the idea of somebody perhaps sitting in front of a group of people who tells a story that appears to come straight out of their head. There's no script, but there is a story structure, and the storyteller is relating that tale in a way that is meeting the particular needs of the audience on that particular night in that particular place.
So you don't do the kind of stuff that if I walk into a library, somebody's sitting in the corner, book open on her lap. Why do I say her? But book open on her lap and then reading a story and doing it for free.
Please do not mention this. You know, I often say this is the biggest insult to storytellers, that story reading is referred to as storytelling. You couldn't have something that's more different. You know, I mentioned that storytelling is without a script. If you've got somebody sitting there reading from a book, the book is effectively the script. There's nothing wrong with story reading. And for people to read from a book and to do that in a creative way, put on voices, set the mood in the way that they change their vocal expression, that's lovely, fantastic. But please don't call it storytelling. That's all I ask.
So storytelling would require, in a sense, telling something that's in your head.
Absolutely.
Do they have to be original stories?
No. Nope. They could be tales from folklore. They could be historical tales, but they could also be original tales.
When you say the story's in your head, and yet the story is something that folks already know, like Cinderella or Hansel and Gretel, at what juncture does it become the storyteller's story?
In many ways, as soon as it comes out of their mouth, I would say. You see, if you're talking about tales like Cinderella and Hansel and Gretel, I think quite often the audience is wanting to see how this storyteller is going to tell that tale. And they will bring their own emphasis to that, and they may even twist some of the characters around and show you another side to that story. It's very much the storyteller who is, I suppose, interpreting the information that they have with them and expressing that in the moment.
Is that interpretation, because it's coming out of one individual, different from, let's say, a play? Let's assume, you know, you performed in a play called Macbeth, and then now you're going to do the storytelling. Will the interpretation be significantly different?
Potentially, yes. But it's hard to say, really, until the storyteller starts talking. Because on the one hand, perhaps with a play that has been through a rehearsal period and it's pretty much set so that when the performance is presented, it's pretty much going to be the same the next night. Sure, actors are responsive to their audience and there is that relationship going on between the stage and the floor. But actually, it's going to be pretty much the same. Whilst a storyteller generally will be telling the story on their own to start with, so they have to portray all the characters in some way, but also they will be giving an emphasis to that story that may be different from night to night, depending on how the audience is responding, depending on what's happened during that day, depending on how the storyteller's feeling. So they're quite different art forms.
Now, K.L. Shakespeare players, you are responsible, or at least you, the format that you have been doing is a play. Now, this is a storytelling. Is this a harbinger of more storytelling to come or what?
In a way, yes. First, I also like to clarify that the format of the Shakespeare plays that we have been doing, in a way, is not the strict sense of play because we insert narrations and we also bring in some elements of storytelling. And so throughout the years, we experimented with different ways of combining storytelling, narration with the scenes itself. Our recent production, the Macbeth, that's where I started to inject more elements of storytelling.
When you say storytelling, what do you mean? I mean, I'm getting the sense from Johnny that his understanding of storytelling is quite different from your understanding of storytelling.
My understanding of storytelling is like, we describe what happened in the scene, and then normally in a one-person storytelling, that person will have to enact, make up different voices, or if he's performing, he will use different physicality. But in this case, we split the storytelling into five actors, and sometimes they take on a particular character. So when the narration comes to regarding that particular character, then he will play the scene out. But I have to say that it's not a very strict storytelling format. Yet it's something just I was experimenting with Shakespeare Demystified format. So that's why this time with this family-friendly version of Macbeth, I like to go to more proper form storytelling. But even that, I'm using three actors instead of one. That's why, for me, it is something quite new to me, and I really need Johnny's expertise to make it into something that works.
Can three people be a storyteller?
Well, like a three-headed beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can. And there are many storytelling groups that will be presenting tales in this kind of way. However, the thing that we're always talking about as storytellers is it turning into almost like an ensemble presentation of a piece? Is it becoming drama? I mean, drama in itself is a term that could be described in many different, were defined in different ways.
Always comes an adjective of sorts.
Yeah. But is it turning into acting? Is it turning into something that is defined by a script? I think what's exciting about this project with K.L. Shakespeare is that we're kind of experimenting with the middle road. You know, I'm coming perhaps as a purist of storytelling about it being alive in the moment art form. And of course, with this version of Macbeth, there is a script that exists that has been written especially for this audience. But what we're doing is experimenting with that and seeing how that can be done in a storytelling way. And I find it quite exciting, really. It's great seeing how the three actors are responding to one another and then perhaps the new skills that they're learning. You know, we've been looking at in some of the rehearsals that the actors are on stage the whole time. And when they're on stage, they are on in that they are engaging all the way through with the audience. There isn't a moment that they have off to get a breath or to change character, to get their brain kind of into the next gear. No, you're on the whole time and you're responding to everything that's happening in the moment for that hour or so.
Also, I just want to say that I got this idea also after reading a book by Mike Alfred, a prominent British director. The title of the book is Then What Happened? So in it, he shared his experience adapting written literature like Charles Dickens' Bleak House and all that and turning them into a theatrical piece, but not a play. They still use the narration as is written by Charles Dickens. And so he called it also a kind of like a form of storytelling. And so that's why where I got the idea. And because he also proposes that it's possible to do a piece like this, not with one storyteller, but with multiple storytellers and you go in and out and you create characters or sets or images without a traditional sense of a sets and costume that we see in play. It's like, you know, you have storytellers, they are just wearing plain clothes and they just transform.
Can I just jump in there and say, this is one of the key factors of storytelling, is the That's right. It's the creation of the set and the scene through the words and the voice, you know. And the idea is, storytellers, one of the reasons why they work without a script is because we visualize the story. I often say, if you can see the story, you can tell the story. I think what we're doing here in this version of Macbeth is the set is very minimal. And in fact, be exciting, you know, for the audience to come and see what we're actually doing with the items that we've got. But the thing is, the whole sense of the forest and the castle and the battles is coming about purely by what the storytellers are sharing and how they're interacting.
Shakespeare has already started storytelling in his plays because, you know, all these long soliloquies that we sometimes see, the character describe about an event and all that. Yeah, that character is doing a storytelling.
K.L. Shakespeare plays, your target audience have always been at least secondary, upper secondary, university students and the general public. But this time, you're going to a much younger age group, 8 years old. Johnny, you come in as a consultant, as I understand about what you do. You also work with children.
Absolutely.
What needs to be adapted doing Shakespeare's plays for children? To start also, is Shakespeare good for children or appropriate?
Shakespeare's good for humans. And so, you know, sure, things need to be adapted so that children can engage with what Shakespeare has to offer. But that's the same with many of the great texts that have been throughout humanity, you know?
Does that mean all his plays can be adapted for kids?
I wouldn't want to say that there's no play that can't be adapted, but some of them are going to be harder than others.
Like, stay away from the histories.
Well, you see, no, you say that. I would say the history plays are probably the easiest to do.
Really?
Because to me, that's just like Star Wars and the Avengers. You know, it's a bunch of big characters fighting over stuff. You've got very clear goodies and baddies. You know, to me, that's the history plays really fit with children's interests and culture. The harder ones might be love stories, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking actually like Romeo and Juliet. Never mind, we'll hold that for a while. I'm speaking with Johnny Gillett, the creative director of the Journeyman Theatre, and Lim Kien Lee, the artistic director of K.L. Shakespeare Plays. And we are talking in the context of diversity, K.L. International Arts Festival, and they will be presenting a show called A Tale That Must Be Told, Macbeth. We'll talk more about it later. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, you're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing with Johnny Gillett and Ken Lee, Lim Ken Lee of K.L. Shakespeare Players. And we are talking about A Tale That Must Be Told, Macbeth. This is a very dark story. What do you have to do to make sure that children as young as 8 years old can have access to the story?
Yeah, well, for me, I'm always thinking about what is there in this story that matches with a child's experience. What is it that kids will recognize, and how can we make those things larger? Because, you know, they're the audience, and we want them to feel like this is their story. Sure, there's a sense of fantasy, a sense of escapism, if you like, about it, and these warriors from some distant land. Most stories I find, we can say, children could interpret that in this way. It's like the work we're doing, you know, we're here on Macbeth. I notice, for instance, the relationship between Lady Macbeth and Macbeth himself is sometimes a bit like a mother and naughty son relationship. So we can expand that a little, and the kids will recognize that. It may also provide some humor as well.
But the story itself is quite dark. People getting killed, witches. How do you make sure that kids feel that this is not going to be so scary?
That's a difficult one in some ways.
Because I've heard some parents say, no, Macbeth, no, I will not let my child go near that play.
Yeah, and of course that's the parents, I assume, the parents' own response, knowing their own children. I would assume it's from those reasons rather than their own insecurities. Yeah, you've got to be careful, I think, with creating scary things with kids. I'm not saying we shouldn't, because actually sometimes it's good to be afraid in a safe space. What I mean by that is fear is part of our lives, part of our experience, but it doesn't necessarily mean things are going to be terrible. We can become anxious about stuff, but then we hope that things will turn out okay. And I think to be used to the idea of anxiety rising, but realizing I can see this through and it will be okay in the end, I think that's probably a good thing to experience and learn as a way of managing things in life. I don't have too much of a worry with the idea of putting scary things into a show. It's just how scary do we allow it to become? We don't want the kids to be going home with nightmares. We don't want them to be running out of the theatre.
That's why I think we set the age minimum at 8, because generally we believe that at that age group, the kids would have been exposed to other fairy tales that have elements of witches, death or murder. So it's not that unfamiliar to them. So I think, like Johnny says, so now the task here is like, how do we bring all these elements without going into too extreme or too scary for them? So we just have to find the balance.
But you see, what kids do, they often will reenact battles. They will fight, do play fights where they have weapons, guns, and swords.
People die.
And people die, exactly. So the way that the battles take place in our show is very similar to kids playing. It's almost like we have these characters in front of us who are going to be telling this story, and they're doing it in a way that we children, as it were, recognize, because that's the way we reenact stories as well.
Yeah. Are your actors going to be playing as if they were children themselves?
We experimented with that, but we find if they're playing with children themselves, sometimes they could come across it a little bit
condescending.
So then we said, no, maybe it's better you be a storyteller. You are who you are, but you're telling stories to children. Then your attitude might change, but always bear in mind it's not patronizing and condescending.
Absolutely.
The story is quite complex. As adults, when we look at Macbeth, we say, now, is this man culpable of what he has done? Is he responsible? Or is he like Oedipus, a victim of the fates? You know, so we ask these kinds of questions. So there is moral ambiguity. Is Lady Macbeth responsible? Are the witches responsible? Is Macbeth responsible? You know, different adult viewer will see the play and read the play, understand the play with different, coming from different perspectives.
Absolutely.
Now, when you have a group of kids, 8 years old, how do you give them moral complexity?
What you have in that story is, a great deal of complexity, but a lot of that is being explored through discussions that result from seeing that play. Basically, it's the story of a guy who gets the idea that he could be in charge and destroys everyone on the way and then loses at the end of it all. That's it, right? That's Macbeth told. So, you know, you could tell the story simply, and what we do with the kids is we present the key events of that tale to tell a good story. Then they can discuss it with their parents or whoever afterwards as they wish. If they want to find out more, there's plenty of resources where they can look it up. And personally, that's my hope with all of this stuff of adapting Shakespeare for kids, is that we give them a sense of it being fun, exciting, and a sense that there's more there to be discovered.
Parents can play an important role in taking this a little bit further. You said, the discussion. So, well, George, little Johnny, what did you see in that play? You know, why did he do that? And then suddenly it allows the space for a question.
Do you know what I often find is a useful question is like, who's your favorite character? Who did you like best? Why was that? What did you like about them? What did you think when they did this then? Why did they do that?
Yeah. This morning, Johnny and I, we were talking about like how a lot of parents or most adults, when they talk about storytelling, they want to have the moral of the story.
Is there a moral for this one?
Yeah, no, that's why we say like... So I think based on your question, it seems to imply that, yeah, how do we make it clear that there is a, the moral of the story of Macbeth is... Yeah, but then we tell, is it necessary?
Isn't that the assumption that when you have young people, that you want to make the world, in a sense, kind of clear? Black is black, white is white. There are no grays.
Yeah. Well, it's personally, I wonder how useful that way of thinking is. Because, you know, we meet complexity all the time. And in this world where communication is becoming more and more easy and quicker, you know, there are so many things where it's difficult to say whether it's black or white, depending on, you know, the context and the culture and the rest of it. I think, yeah, sure, we need perhaps a moral compass, perhaps certain things that we are agreed on we want to see happen. But how we get to that point quite often can vary. I personally do not tell stories where I say at the end, and this is the meaning, this is the moral. I'd much rather tell a good story and then say, what do you think that story was about?
I assume if I were a parent listening to this conversation, I would think, you know, these people are all talking about children, children, children. What do they know about children? I mean, Kenley, you are not married. So, Johnny.
Okay, so I've been through it all. I've been working with kids for 30 years, and I've got two adult children myself. Ah. So, you know, I've seen it from both sides. I've seen it from the sides we're working with kids, and I'm thinking, oh, what are the parents thinking? And then I became a parent myself, and I'm thinking, oh, man, this job's much harder than I thought.
Yeah, the little experience I have is with my nephews. I have three nephews that I'm quite close to them, and one of my job is always telling them stories. And since young, I tell them sometimes very scary stories. Actually, they love, they prefer scary stories. And now I see that they're growing up all right. So, yeah.
We live in this postmodern world. Mm. We want to hold to certain values, but at the same time, we don't want our children to become so clingy. Oh, that's not the right word. So, like, they hold so steadfast that they cannot embrace other values. So we want them to be kind and gentle and to be honest. But when they see something that is not something that they believe in, they still can accept. You know, especially when it comes to cultures and religions, which impart to every one of us values.
This is why Shakespeare is so important, because Shakespeare is about complexity and he has so many characters. All of them are flawed, and yet many of them are admirable. And so, you know, what Shakespeare provides, I think, is a space where we can see how humanity deals with things. And we could see mistakes that are made, and we could see, you know, people having to do things perhaps they don't want to do, but they have to do. So many stories being presented in front of us. And for me, you know, as a parent, I want to talk about these things with my kids. I want to enable my children to be able to discuss. I don't want them just to walk away or to be scared. I want them to see difference, to recognize difference. And if it's not for them, they can still talk about it. They can still discuss it.
This is an opportunity, an occasion to have a common platform to talk about.
Absolutely.
Especially about values. I mean, I think values are the hardest things to talk about.
Yeah, values are hard to talk about. But, you know, as a parent or as an adult, you know, when we have kids, they challenge our viewpoints. They challenge our stance. And that's why it's difficult, I think, because then we have to find a way of justifying why we've believed in this up to this point. And quite often the answer is, just because I say so. Or, you know, I'm the adult here, I'm the parent, you listen to me.
End of discussion.
Yeah, which, okay, fine. It means the discussion's over, but it's not an adequate answer, really. It doesn't enable that child to be able to take on that value for themselves and understand why that's important for them. But, you know, the thing is about this Macbeth that we're presenting is not only do I believe it's a space that could start some great discussions in families, but it's just going to be a fun thing to experience as a family together as well.
What are the fun elements that you have put in into this production? I'm not talking about the story itself. You say the set is simple. If I were to walk into the space, what would I see?
We are using some dolls and then also boxes that resemble play blocks, toy blocks, the audience will get to see how the storytellers manipulating these props and boxes and toys in their storytelling, which is quite familiar with kids,
children,
because
they
always
them,
play. They you know, they have role playing. Sometimes they use a doll. Sometimes they even use other objects like a spoon or whatever, can be a character. So there's something that we are experimenting, and it can be fun.
Yeah, I think people will be surprised when they walk into the theatre to think this is Macbeth initially, because it will look like a place where children are playing. And then the story comes forward. And just in the storytelling, there's a lot of humour that goes on. And we've got the kids involved, they're going to be involved. I don't want to say too much, give away too many of our secrets, but they're going to be involved in the battles. They're going to be involved in sort of where the characters are going and forming some of the scenery.
Yes.
It's a very interactive show.
Participatory.
Absolutely. But the thing is that we want it to feel like we're playing the whole adventure together.
So you have this productions here, your Macbeth, and then this Macbeth version 2. What are K.L. Shakespeare's plans for next year?
Romeo and Juliet.
And then a storytelling version?
Yeah, not sure. But also I want to see how's the response for this. Although I believe that it's going to be great, but I'm still searching the form. And yeah, we just want to see how it turned out and whether we can make it a regular form.
Will Romeo and Juliet be too shabby, too,
you know,
too icky for 8-year-olds?
Yeah, I think, you know, love stories are difficult, perhaps, for kids between the ages of 8 and 12. There's a lot of embarrassment in the idea of characters falling in love. But there's actually a lot of other stuff going on in Romeo and Juliet. You've got the warring families. Yes. You've got the incredibly heroic, attractive character of Mercutio. You know, I say heroic in the sense of like kids would immediately be attracted to him. Everyone is, you know, because of his charisma. And then he dies. You know, that's quite a big thing that happens in that story. But so there's a lot else going on. And if we choose to create a storytelling form of Romeo and Juliet, it'd be an interesting journey.
And you think it will work? It can work?
I know it can work.
Ooh, great.
Wow.
But before we get to Romeo and Juliet, this year, A Tale That Must Be Told, Macbeth, a children-friendly performance by K.L. Shakespeare Players, part of the Diversity K.L. International Arts Festival 2017. This play will open on the second weekend of September, starting Friday 8th and running all the way through Sunday, September 10th. There are two performances each day, 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. at Studio Ramli Hassan in Bukit Tengku, otherwise known as Kenny Hills. Tickets are priced at 35 ringgit. And if you need more information, go to Diversity's website and you get the information there. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.